She's a lovely girl. Thinks the world of me.
How dare you, sir?
Hold your tongue, woman. Oh. Leave me alone. Oh. Ah, damn the thing.
Mother, whatever's going on?
Leave us, Alice.
Oh, no, you don't. No. Come here. Yeah, come on, give me your kiss.
Mr. Drebber!
Let go of me!
I want you out of my house, Mr. Drebber.
Oh, yes?
Today. You shall leave today. And think yourself lucky that my son Arthur wasn't here to see your disgusting conduct.
Why? What would he have done, huh?
I must say, Holmes, you couldn't have found a place with a better cook. I haven't tasted steak and kidney pudding like that for years.
Some brandy, Doctor?
I believe I will. Thank you.
As I suspect, the late Mr. Hudson ate his way into an early grave. Killing by kindness could be a very subtle form of murder, don't you think?
What an astonishing notion.
There. To your continued recovery.
Thank you.
Now, let's have some music. If Bach isn't to your taste, perhaps you'd like Wagner.
Wagner.
Nothing will come of nothing, Doctor. Ask me a question.
I realize it's not actually any of my business, but are you studying medicine?
No.
Oh.
Sherlock Holmes. His limits.
Holmes?
Knowledge of literature, nil. Knowledge of philosophy, nil. Knowledge of astronomy, nil. Knowledge of politics, feeble.
I burnt that list.
Not very thoroughly. Knowledge of botany, variable, well up on belladonna, opium and poisons generally. Knows nothing of practical gardening.
This is outrageous.
Knowledge of geology, practical but limited. Knowledge of chemistry, profound. Thank you. Knowledge of anatomy, accurate but unsystematic. Knowledge of sensational literature, immense. Appears to know every detail of every horror perpetrated in the century.
You left out plays the violin well.
That part you did succeed in burning. Oh, forgive me, Doctor, but I found your list as intriguing as you evidently find me. What conclusion have you drawn?
I couldn't reach any conclusion. I burnt that list in frustration.
All those clues, and you deduced nothing.
Not a thing.
Well, well. Have you seen this magazine? It came this morning.
No, I don't believe I have. Is there anything of interest in it?
Look at this article.
A Book of Life. Ambitious sort of title. The Science of Deduction and Analysis. Begin by mastering an elementary problem. On meeting a fellow man, learn at a glance to distinguish his history and the trade or profession to which he belongs. By a man's fingernails, by his coat sleeve, by his trouser knees, by each of these things, a man's calling is plainly revealed. What ineffable twaddle!
You think so?
It's unsigned. I'd like to see this fella clapped down in a third-class carriage on the Underground and asked to give the trades of all his fellow travellers. I'd lay 1,000 to 1 against him.
You'll lose your money. As for the article, I wrote it myself.
You?
Yes, I have a turn both for observation and deduction. The theories there are really extremely practical. So practical I depend on them for my bread and cheese.
But how? What exactly do you do for a living?
Ah, at last, the direct question. Well, I am a consulting detective, if you can understand what that is. I suppose I'm the only one in the world.
Really?
Oh, yes. Well, here in London, we have lots of government detectives and lots of private ones. When these fellows are at a loss, they come to me and I put them on the right scent.
And how is it that you can succeed where they fail?
Knowledge of sensational literature. Immense. That was very perceptive of you. I have made a particular study of the history of crime. There's a strong family resemblance about misdeeds. And if you have all the details of a thousand at your finger ends, it's odd if you can't unravel the thousand and first. Couple that with the scientific application of observation and deduction, or ineffable twaddle, as you so colourfully described it. And there you are.
A consulting detective.
At your service. For a fee, of course.
And some of your clients are policemen?
Oh, quite so. Well, one fellow's been here several times.
Oh, yes, you introduced me. Lestrade, a little sallow man, rat-faced.
Yeah, I see you have the knack for observation yourself. He's a well-known detective, Scotland Yard, and got himself into a fog recently over a forgery case. I solved it for him.
And the others?
Mostly sent on by private inquiry agencies.
And you solved their problems without leaving this room?
As usually. Now and again a case turns up which is a little more complex. Then I have to bustle about and see things with my own eyes.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Not at all. When we first met, I told you that you'd been in Afghanistan.
A lucky guess.
Oh, I try never to guess. Oh, no, it's a shocking habit. Now, I knew it. Now, let's see if I can give you the line of reasoning. Here is a gentleman of a medical type with the air of a military man, an army doctor, then. He's just come from the tropics, for his face is dark, and that is not the natural colour of his skin, for his wrists are fair. He has undergone hardship and sickness, and has recently been seriously injured in at least two places. Where could an English army doctor have seen such trials? Clearly, in Afghanistan. The whole train of thought didn't occupy a second. I put the conclusion into words, and you were astonished. Good night, Doctor.
He was a terrible man, Arthur.
Why not didn't you throw him out earlier, Mother?
They were paying £14 a week. And this the slack season. I thought I was acting for the best.
It's all right, he's gone now.
I wish I'd been here. Oh,
please, Arthur, let's forget about it.
Now, who on earth can that be at this hour?
I'll go.
There's no need. Jenny's still up.
Hello, Jenny.
Oh, no.
Is it him? Is it Drebber?
Good evening, ladies.
I thought I told you that you were...
Surprised to see me, are you? I've come to take your little Alice away with
no.
me. Ah, you live like a princess. Come here and kiss me.
Come on.
Who's there?
Take this for a kiss. Outside with you. Come on, get out. Listen to me, Trevor. If you dare to show your face in our house again, I'll kill you. Do you hear me? And this thanks will you remember. I mean it, Trevor. I'll kill you.
Not up at Bart's today?
I was right. You do have a talent for observation.
Trust you've left me some coffee. Anything interesting in the paper? Evidently not.
There are no crimes and no criminals these days. What's the use of having brains in my profession? I know well that I have it in me to make my name famous. No man has ever lived who's brought the same amount of study and natural talent to the detection of crime as I have done.
I believe you.
And what's the result? There's no crime to detect, or at most some bungling villainy so transparent that even a Scotland Yard official can see through it.
This coffee's cold.
I'll ring for some more. I wonder what he's looking for.
Who?
Just crossing the street. See?
Oh, you mean the retired sergeant of marines.
Rag and bunch! That's a pure guess and a safe one, too. You know perfectly well. I've no way of verifying it.
On the contrary, I believe you'll have every chance. Listen.
Retired sergeant of marines, eh?
Undoubtedly.
Come in.
A person to see you, Mr. Holmes.
Yeah, thank you, Mrs. Hudson.
This way, gentlemen.
I have a letter for Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Ah, thank you.
Good day, gentlemen.
One moment, my man.
Sir?
May I ask what your trade may be?
Commissionaire, sir. Uniform away for repairs.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Sir?
And you were?
A sergeant, sir. Royal Marine Light Infantry.
Thank you, sergeant. Yeah.
Thank you, sir. Good day.
How in the world did you deduce that?
Deduce what? Excuse me, you broke the thread of my thoughts.
I'm sorry, but it was wonderful.
Commonplace. Great blue anchor tattooed on the back of his hand, military bearing, air of command, dozen other details. And look at this note.
Oh, thank you.
I said just now there were no criminals. It appears that I was wrong.
This is terrible.
It does seem to be a little out of the common.
Out of the common? A man bearing no sign of a wound found dead in a pool of blood.
In an empty house in Brixton.
Who is this Tobias Gregson?
The smartest of the Scotland Yarders.
And he's come to you for help?
Well, he and Lestrade are the pick of a bad lot, and they have their knives into one another. They're as jealous as a pair of professional beauties. Oof, there'll be some fun in this case if they're both put on the scent. Watson?
Oh, surely there's not a moment to be lost. I'll order you a cab.
Oh, well, I'm not sure about whether I shall go.
What? It's just the chance you've been longing for.
Oh, my dear fellow, what does it matter to me? Supposing I do unravel the problem, Gregson and Lestrade and company will pocket all the credit. That comes of being an unofficial personage.
But he begs you to help him.
Yes, well, he knows that I'm his superior and acknowledges it to me, but he'd cut his tongue out before owning it to a third person. However, we may as well go and have a look. I may have a laugh at them, if I have nothing else. Right, come on. Your hat, come on.
You wish me to come?
Yeah, if you've nothing better to do.
Sorry, gents. Can't go in there.
Good morning, Constable. We are here at Inspector Gregson's invitation.
Oh, beg your pardon, sir. You'll find him inside, with Inspector Lestrade.
Oh, excellent.
Sir?
Nothing. Come along, Watson.
Thank you, Constable.
Sir?
Holmes? Shh. Sorry. What is it? Have you found something?
Yes, exactly what I was expecting to find.
Ah, footprints.
Watson.
Yes?
This may not be pleasant. Are you sure your nerves can take it?
I wouldn't miss this for the world.
Good man. Ah, Gregson.
Mr. Holmes, it's kind of you to come.
Inspector Tobias Gregson, Dr. John Watson.
Good day, Doctor.
Inspector.
I'll be glad of an expert medical opinion. Oh, come in, gentlemen. I've left everything untouched.
Except that.
Mr. Holmes?
The pathway man. Have a herd of buffaloes had passed along it, there couldn't be a greater mess.
Well, I've had so much to do inside the house. I had relied on Mr. Lestrade to look after the path.
Of course. Did you come here in a cab, Gregson?
No, sir.
Nor Lestrade?
No, sir.
Ah. Then let us go and look at this unfortunate individual.
Have you found out who the poor fellow was yet, Inspector?
Yes, we have, Doctor. He was an American, seemingly. Name of...
Drebber. Enoch J. Drebber.
Thank you, Mr. Lestrade.
Mr. Gregson. Good morning, Mr. Holmes.
Lestrade.
I didn't expect to see you here, Doctor.
Good morning, Inspector.
Well, I suppose there's no harm. It's this room, gentlemen, but before you go in, perhaps I should warn you. It's not exactly pretty.
Yes, yes, Lestrade.
Good God. Fascinating.
This case will make a stir, mark my words. It beats anything I've seen. And I'm no chicken.
I agree with Lestrade. This is a nasty business.
Come, Doctor. To work. You're quite sure there's no wound?
Positive.
And yet there's blood everywhere. It reminds me of the death of Van Janssen in Utrecht in the year 34. Remember the case, Gregson?
No, sir.
Read it up. You really should. There's nothing new under the sun.
What do you think, Mr. Rance?
Don't really restrain. I've just walked in the door. Doctor.
Yes?
I wonder if you'd oblige me by taking a few notes.
Notes?
It would be of enormous assistance.
Then I'd be glad to.
Use my notepad. You have a pencil?
Yes.
Excellent. Gregson, with your permission, I shall examine the body.
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. Lestrade.
Mr. Holmes.
Be so good as to hold my hat. Now, let's see. Yes. Now, this is the body of a man about 43 or 44 years of age. Mm-hmm. Middle-sized. Broad-shouldered. Well-dressed. Immaculate collar and cuffs. Patent leather boots. Size 10. A top hat on the floor beside him. Body curiously twisted. Hands clenched. Legs interlocked. Watson.
Yes, Holmes?
Smell his lips.
Good Lord.
Shh. Quite so. Thank you, Doctor. He's not been moved at all.
No more than we had to examine him properly.
Yes, of course. Lestrade, give me a hand to turn him over.
Right.
A ring. It was caught up in the folds of his jacket.
Got it. This is a woman's wedding ring. There's been a woman here.
Oh, this complicates matters. Heaven knows they were complicated enough before.
You're sure it doesn't simplify them? Hmm? But there's nothing to be learned by staring at it. What did you find in his pockets?
We have it all here.
More notes, if you please, Doctor. There's a gold watch, gold ring, gold pin with rubies. Whatever the motive was, it certainly wasn't robbery. Yes. Russian leather card case.
With visiting cards of Enoch J. Drebber of Cleveland, USA.
And two letters, one addressed to E.J. Drebber, and the other two, Joseph Stangerson.
What address, Lestrade?
American Exchange, the Strand. Be called for.
Have you made any inquiries as to this man Stangerson, Gregson?
I did so at once.
Indeed, Lestrade.
Advertisements in all newspapers and a man sent to the American Exchange. No information yet.
Have you sent to Cleveland?
I telegraphed this morning.
How did you word your inquiries?
I simply detailed the circumstances.
Nothing else? Is there no single factor upon which this whole case appears to hinge? Will you not telegraph again?
I've said all I have to say.
Mr. Gregson! Gentlemen, I have just made a discovery of the highest importance.
Oh, yes?
Yes. Pray, look over here. This is the darkest part of the room, but observe this candle stub on the shelf. When it was burning, this area of the wall would have been clearly lit. Now, what do you make of that?
Good God. Is that blood?
Yes.
R-A-C-H-E.
Written in letters of blood. Rach. A most important clue.
Well, what does it mean now that you found it, Rach?
It means that the writer was going to put the female name Rachel, but was disturbed before he or she had time to finish. You mark my words. A woman named Rachel has something to do with all this. Ah, it's all very well for you to laugh, Mr. Holmes, but the old hound is the best when all's said and done.
I really do beg your pardon, Lestrade. You deserve the credit for having found it. And with your permission, I'll examine the room now.
I've already done so.
Now, carry on, Mr. Holmes.
Thank you.
He won't find anything else. I'll bet my pension.
Ah, look at him sniffing around. No disrespect intended, Doctor, but there's a right way and a wrong way to go about this sort of work.
Yes, I'm sure there is.
Have you known him long, Doctor?
Long enough to know that he does nothing without some definite purpose.
Ah, Mr. Holmes, what do you think?
It would be robbing you of the credit if I were to presume to help you. You two are doing so well. But I should like to speak to the constable who found the body.
John Rance. He's off duty now.
I have a note of his home address. Here you are, Doctor.
Thank you, Inspector.
Come along, Watson. We'll look him up. I'll tell you one thing which may help you in the case.
Oh, yes?
There has been a murder done, and the murderer was a man. He was more than 6 feet high, was in the prime of life, had small feet for his height, wore coarse, square-toed boots, and smoked a Trichinopoly cigar. He came here with his victim in a four-wheeled cab, which was drawn by a horse with three old shoes and a new one on his off foreleg. In all probability, the murderer had a florid face, and the fingernails of his right hand were remarkably long. These are only a few indications, but they may assist you.
If this man was murdered, how was it done?
Poison.
Poison.
Oh, and one other thing, Lestrade. Don't waste your time looking for Miss Rachel. Rache is the German word for revenge. Good morning.
It seems obvious once you've explained it. I can understand how you knew about the cab and its horse from the signs in the mud, and how you calculated the height of the murderer from the length of his stride. I was right about the footprints.
You were right about the footprints.
But what about his age? In the prime of life, you said.
Well, if a man can step 4.5 feet without the smallest effort, he can't be quite in the sear and yellow. There's no mystery about it.
The abnormally long fingernails?
The writing on the wall was done with a man's forefinger dipped in blood. The scratches made by his nail were unmistakable, as was the wholly distinctive ash which had dropped from his Trichinopoly cigar. I flatter myself that I can distinguish at a glance the ash of any known brand of cigar or tobacco.
Good Lord. You said the murderer had a florid face.
No, I said that there was a strong probability of it, which is not the same thing.
Yet my head's in a whirl. Rache, revenge. Are we looking for a German assassin?
I'm not going to tell you anything more, Doctor.
Oh.
You know, a conjurer gets no credit once he's explained his tricks. If I show you too many of my methods, you'll conclude that I'm a very ordinary individual after all.
Oh, never. You have brought detection as near an exact science as it ever will be brought in this world.
I'll tell you one more thing I read from the footprints. The two men came in the same cab and they walked down the path as friendly as possible, arm in arm, in all probability.
Arm in arm?
Yes. Once they get inside, patent leathers, the victim stood still and square toes walked up and down the room getting more and more excited. Then, the tragedy occurred. We must hurry up. I want to go to a concert this afternoon.
I'll tell it you from the beginning, sir. My time is from 10 at night till 6 in the morning. At 11, there was a fight at the White Hart, but bar that was quiet enough on the beat. About 2, or maybe a little after, I thought I'd take a bit of a look around down the Brixton Road. It was precious dirty and lonely. Not a soul did I see, barring a cab or two. I was strolling down, thinking, between ourselves, how uncommon handy a 4 a gin hot would be, when suddenly the glint of a light caught my eye in that house, what I knew was empty on account of him that owns it won't have the drain seat to, even though the last tenant what lived there died of the typhoid fever.
Yes.
The door was unlocked. I pushed it open and went into the front room, where there was the stub of a candle burning. In the light of the candle, I saw... Well, you know what I saw. I went back to the gate and sounded my rattle, and that brought Ted Murcher from the Olden Grove beat. Apart from the two of us, the street was empty. Well, empty as far as anybody that could be of any good goes. I've seen many a drunk chap in my time, but never anyone as crying drunk as that cove. He was at the gate when I come out, leaning up against the railings and singing at the pitch of his lungs. He could hardly stand. I can see him now, clear as day. Great tall chap, with his long red face.
Constable and... Rance.
Sir?
What became of this man?
Oh, I'd quite enough to do without looking after him. I'll wager he found his way home all right.
The blundering fool! To think of his having such an incomparable stroke of luck and not taking advantage of it.
It's true that his description of the drunk tallies with your idea of the murderer.
Tallies? That drunk was the murderer.
But why should he come back to the house after leaving it? That's not the way of criminals.
The ring, man, the ring. That's what he came back for. If we have no other way of catching him, we can always bait our line with a ring. I shall have him, Doctor. I'll lay you 2-1.
No bet.
I must thank you.
For what?
I might not have gone, but for you. I might have missed the finest study I ever came across. A study in scarlet, eh?
A study in scarlet?
Yeah. Why shouldn't we use a little art jargon? There's the scarlet thread of murder running through the colourless skein of life, and our duty is to unravel it and isolate it and expose every inch of it. But now I must send a telegram, and then lunch, I think, and then for Madame Norman Neruda. Her attack and bowing are splendid. What's that little thing she plays so magnificently?
I don't believe I know it.
Oh, damn this shoulder. That'll teach you to overdo things, Doctor. Chasing about London after German subversives. Come in.
Oh, good afternoon, Doctor. I thought I heard you come back. I just wanted to see if dinner at the usual time would be convenient. Why, Dr. Watson, whatever is the matter?
Nothing, Mrs. Hudson, nothing at all.
Nonsense. Come over here and sit down this minute. You look exhausted.
My dear lady, I assure
Don't you try to sweet talk me, young man. I'm not some slip of a thing you can get around just like that.
Mrs. Hudson.
Yes, well, I dare say it's worked with a good few before now, but I've seen something of life, and I know a sick man when I see one. Now, are you going to sit down, Doctor, or are you going to be stubborn and stand there pretending until you fall down?
I'm sorry, Mrs. Hudson. You're quite right.
That's better. I'll get you some chamomile tea. And while I'm doing it, you can put your feet up. Here, let me help you.
Thank you. I do beg your pardon.
Try to get some sleep. I dare say he won't be back for hours yet. What is it this time? The hospital again? Another stroll around the East End.
A violin concert. St. James's Hall, I think.
He's one of a kind, your friend. Now, I'll see to your tea. You get some sleep.
Yeah, you wouldn't believe the morning I've had, Mrs. Hudson.
I dare say not. Sleep now.
I don't think I could. It's too much excitement, you see. Too much excitement.
It was magnificent, Watson, quite magnificent. Do you remember what Darwin says about music?
What?
He claims that the power of producing and appreciating it existed among the human race long before the power of speech was arrived at. Perhaps that's why we are so subtly influenced by it. Yes, there are vague memories in our souls of those misty centuries when the world was in its childhood.
It's rather a broad idea.
Well, one's ideas must be as broad as nature if one's to interpret nature. What's the matter?
You're not looking quite yourself. This Brixton Road affair has upset you.
To tell you the truth, it has. I ought to be more case-hardened after my Afghan experiences. I saw my own comrades hacked to death at Maiwand without losing my nerve. But I just can't shake off the image of that twisted body in that terrible room.
I can understand. There's a mystery about this which stimulates the imagination, and imagination is the breeding ground of horror. Have you seen the evening papers?
No.
Well, they give a fairly good account of the affair, but none of them mention the ring. Just as well.
Why?
Well, look at this announcement in the found column. There.
Found in the Brixton Road this morning, a plain gold wedding ring.
There's a copy of that in every evening paper.
Apply between 8 and 9 tonight to Dr. J. Watson.
Excuse me using your name. If I use my own, some of these dunderheads would recognize it and want a medal in the affair.
Yeah, well, no, that's all right. But suppose somebody answers. I have no ring.
Oh, yes, you have. Here. This is almost a facsimile.
Who do you expect will come?
Why, our florid friend with the square toes.
The murderer?
Well, why should he fear a trap? Well, you shall see him within the hour.
And then?
Well, you can leave me to deal with him. Have you any weapons?
My old service revolver and a few cartridges.
Well, you'd better clean and load it. It's as well to be ready for anything. Your pistol in your pocket. Speak to him in an ordinary way. Don't frighten him.
Don't frighten him. Holmes, is Mrs. Hudson safe?
Perfectly. This man is a calculating murderer, not a madman who strikes out at random. I asked her to send him up alone and then lock herself and the maid in the kitchen. Now, here he is. Remember, do nothing to make him suspicious. He's already killed one man. Come in.
Dr. Watson?
Yes, madam?
I've come about the ring.
What o'clock did you return here last night?
I've told you, I can't remember.
You admit to assaulting the man?
Yes, yes. How many more times?
And then you left him lying in the gutter and just walked away. Can you produce any witnesses to support this story? Other than members of your family, I mean?
I thought I heard a cab.
You thought you heard a cab?
Well, the cabbie may have seen us. I don't know.
Arthur Charpentier, I'm placing you under arrest for the willful murder of one Enoch J. Drebber of the United States of America. Take him away.
God bless you, sir. You've done a Christian deed this day. We never thought to see this ring again, that we didn't.
I'm pleased to have been of service, Mrs. Sawyer. Good evening to you.
And to you, Doctor. My Sally will be a glad woman this night. The Lord be praised. God bless you. And you too, sir.
Good night.
Good night.
Watson? Oh, I'm sorry, but the look on your face. I'd have given £1,000 for a camera and some flash powder.
Yes.
Look, I'm sorry you were wrong about the ring. Obviously, Drebber just picked it up in the street where that poor old thing's daughter lost it. What are you doing?
Following her, of course.
That feeble old woman. Holmes!
Wait up, Bobby!
Who's there?
Easy, Watson.
Holmes, what time is it?
Just before midnight. Do you mind if I light the lamp? My apologies.
No, it's all right.
Have you just got back?
Yes.
Oh, what on earth happened?
Holmes, don't be so infuriated.
What the devil?
Oh, I wouldn't have the Scotland Yarders know it for all the world. They'd never let me hear the end of it.
What? The end of what?
Very well. I don't mind telling a story against myself. That creature hobbled a little way and then began to limp. She hailed a four-wheeler. I tried to get near enough to catch the address, but I needn't have bothered. She sang it out loud enough to be heard the other side of the street. 13 Duncan Street, Houndsditch.
That's the address she gave me.
Yes. Oh, this begins to look genuine, I thought.
So what did you do?
I perched myself on the back of the cab out of sight.
You did what?
Oh, it's an art every detective should be an expert at. Well, away we rattled and never drew rein till we got there. I hopped off just before we came to the door and strolled down the street. The cab pulled up, the driver jumped down, and nothing came out.
But what had happened to me?
When I reached the driver, he was groping about frantically in the empty cab and giving vent to the finest collection of oaths that ever I listened to.
But what had happened to Mrs. Sawyer?
I inquired at number 13. The house belongs to a respectable paper hanger called Keswick.
Keswick?
Keswick. No Mrs. Sawyer had ever been heard of there.
You mean to say that tottering, feeble old woman was able to get out of the cab while it was going along without either you or the driver seeing her?
Old woman be damned. Oh, we were the old women to be taken in. Now, it must have been a young man and an active one, too, besides being an incomparable actor.
The disguise was superb.
Yes. Now, Doctor, you're looking done up.
I'm afraid I am.
Take my advice and turn in. I won't disturb you.
You're not retiring?
No. No. I want to think.
Good night, then.
Yeah.
I left him in the dim light of the lamp, seated in front of the smouldering fire, wrapped in an old mouse-coloured dressing gown, his eyes fixed vacantly upon the corner of the room, and his long legs stretched out across the hearth. Long into the watches of the night, I heard the slow, melancholy wailing of his violin.
That was part one of A Study in Scarlet by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, dramatised in two parts by Bert Cools, with Clive Merrison as Sherlock Holmes and Michael Williams as Dr. John Watson. Joseph Stangerson was played by Matt Zimmerman, Enoch Drebber by Ed Bishop, Inspector Lestrade by Donald Gee, Inspector Gregson by John Moffat, and Mrs. Hudson by Anna Cropper. Paul Downing played Stamford, John Bull, Arthur, Marcia King, Madame Charpentier, Jane Slavin, Alice, and Michael Kilgariff, P.C. Rance. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The violinist was Alexander Balanescu. A Study in Scarlet was directed by Ian Cottrell and produced by David Johnston.
There are those who prefer the 76, but to my mind, the 71 has never been surpassed. It has that extra touch of finesse. Now, let me see. Ah, yes. Oh, dear, oh, dear. I'm afraid that things have been allowed to go just a little far, have they not? They are an expensive addiction. Fascinating, of course, exciting, but expensive. Payment in full 10 days from now, or the possibility of your continuing good health will attract only very short odds.
Silver Blaze by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Dramatized for radio by Bert Cools. With Clive Merrison as Sherlock Holmes and Michael Williams as Dr. John Watson. And featuring Jack May as Colonel Ross. Silver Blaze.
There you are, Edith.
Thank you, Jim.
Excuse me. Oh, I'm terribly sorry. Didn't mean to startle you.
Who are you, sir?
Fact is, I'm lost. Can you tell me where I am?
You're at King's Poyland Training Stables.
Am I indeed? What a stroke of luck.
Excuse me, sir.
No, wait. I understand that a lad watches over the horses at night.
How did you know that?
Oh, is that his supper? Smells good. Stay where you are. Now, I'm sure you'd like to earn the price of a new dress, wouldn't you? See that the boy has this tonight, and you shall have the prettiest dress that money can buy.
What is it?
Just make sure that he has it.
Get out of my way!
Quiet, King. What's the matter with you? It's only Edie with a supper.
Ned! Open the window, quick!
What's the matter?
Oh, Ned!
What's wrong? Here, give me that.
There's a man! He's coming over here.
What? Did he touch you?
He kept on about you.
Me?
I want to talk to you about Silver Blaze. It will put some money in your pocket.
Edie, roam back to the house and get Mr. Straker, quick.
Right.
Now, you shouldn't have done that.
You damn tout. I'll show you how we treat your sort. What are you doing? Get away from that window. You get out now or I set a dog on you.
All right, I'm going. I'm going. No need for violence. You should have helped me, you know.
Easy, Blaze. That's the way. You did quite right to call me, Ned. Damn totes.
No, I didn't like the look of him, Governor. And he proper put the wind up, Edie.
Did he threaten you at all?
Well, not in so many words, but he should have seen his stick, huh? I bet he could be handy with that if he wanted.
He'll likely not be back. But keep your eyes open,
Mr. Straker.
And make sure you lock this door after me.
What's that?
Go back to sleep, love.
Oh, John. What time is it?
Just after one. Go back to sleep.
Why are you dressed? What's the matter?
Nothing. Look, I can't settle. I'm going over to the stables.
Oh, John. He won't have come back.
I'm just going to check that everything's all right. Don't worry.
My husband.
No, ma'am.
Oh, well, leave that, Edith. Come with me.
Ned?
Ned! Mm. What's the matter with him? Ned! John! John!
Ned! Can you hear me?
Mm. Is he sick, ma'am? Let me look at him. Edie, I think he's been drugged.
Drugged?
Run up to the loft and wake Jim and Freddie.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, my God. Edie!
What?
Silver Blaze! He's gone!
I told you I could see something. It's Master's coat. What the devil's it doing out here?
Fred,
look. Down in the hollow. Oh, God. Careful.
Oh, God almighty. Put yourself together. Help me get him covered up before the missus sees him.
Ready? Jim, are you down there?
Go back, Mom. Edie, don't let her see.
What do you mean? Move aside. Oh. Do as I say.
Yes, Mom.
Do you mind if I open the window?
No, no. Sherlock Holmes had been up since long before breakfast, rambling about our room with his chin upon his chest and his brows knitted, charging and recharging his pipe with the strongest and most foul-smelling black tobacco, and absolutely deaf to any of my questions or remarks. Mm.
I said, would you mind if I opened a window?
Now, why the devil did I put that telegram?
I knew perfectly well what it was that he was brooding over. There was only one problem before the public which could offer any challenge to his powers of analysis.
Watson, where is that damn thing?
Perhaps if the air were a little clearer, you'd be able to see where you put it.
Ah, yeah. Watson, I've made a blunder.
Oh, yes?
Yes, I'm afraid it's a more common occurrence than anyone would think who only knew me through your ridiculously romanticised writings.
Now, wait just one minute.
What?
If we're going to have this argument yet again, I insist on... I've never known a man who so despised fresh air.
And before we start in on my shortcomings, may I say that nothing I've ever done could possibly irritate you half as much as that laugh irritates me.
Really?
Really.
Huh. That's fascinating. Why haven't you mentioned this before? Well, perhaps your forthcoming nuptials have given you a new spirit of frankness. Do you intend to be this direct with the excellent Miss Morstan?
Oh, we will not discuss Miss Morstan, if you don't mind.
It would make an absolutely splendid monograph. Yes, upon the classification of non-verbal utterances and their effects on various listeners.
Good God, and you have the infernal gall to criticise my writing.
Yes, well, perhaps you're right.
Well, what's so amusing about fresh air, anyway?
No, it was just that your mentioning it was so beautifully apposite. I have to go down to Devon.
Ah, to the King's Pyland Racing Stables on Dartmoor.
Bravo, Watson.
Yeah, I've been expecting it. I'm only surprised that you weren't sent for 2 days ago.
I was.
Ah.
As I said, a blunder. There, we're going well. Our rate at present is 53.5 miles per hour.
53.5 miles per... Ah, I haven't observed the quarter-mile posts.
Nor have I.
Oh.
Yeah, but the telegraph poles on this line are 60 yards apart, and the calculation is a simple one.
So... what was this blunder?
Well, the fact is, I didn't believe that the most famous and distinctive racehorse in England could remain concealed for very long, especially in so sparse a place as the north of Dartmoor. I thought the case would be over and done with days ago.
According to this, it is. What about the man they've arrested for the murder?
Fitzroy Simpson.
Well, the paper speaks well of this Inspector Gregory. He seems to have an excellent case.
No, he has nothing. Come on.
Simpson was hanging round the stables, trying to bribe the maid, threatening the lad.
He hasn't found the horse. The horse is the key.
Simpson was making off with the horse when Straker caught up with him.
and he killed the trainer in order to get away. So, if Gregory can get Simpson to confess to the murder, then the whole story of what he's done with the horse will come out. Isn't that the obvious approach?
Exactly, the obvious approach. Gregory may be making a name for himself, but he lacks the most essential quality for a detective.
And that is?
Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson, an honor.
Inspector?
May I present Colonel Ross, the employer of the murdered man, and the owner of Silver Blaze.
Good afternoon, Colonel.
Mr. Holmes, Gregory here speaks very highly of you.
Oh.
I trust you'll live up to his recommendations.
Let us hope that your trust is justified.
You may rest assured, Colonel, that if anyone can bring this murderer to book, Holmes can.
Well, of course, I'm anxious the poor Straker should be avenged. But make no mistake, Mr. Holmes, I'm engaging you to recover my horse.
Colonel, you have made your position perfectly clear.
Good.
I'm quite convinced that Simpson is our man. Of course, he's still denying all knowledge of the business.
Tell me, Colonel, how long has Straker been in your employ?
12 years.
A good man?
The best trainer I've ever had. There was no aspect of the business he couldn't handle. From the smallest local merchant to the grandest London breeder.
Did he often deal with such people on your behalf?
One does not keep a dog and bark oneself.
No, I suppose not. Tell me about the horse.
Silver Blaze. He's named for the pure white streak on his forehead. Apart from that and a mottled off hind leg, he's as black as jet. He's certainly the most valuable horse in the country.
And he's the prime favourite for the Wessex Plate next Tuesday.
Well, he was, until this catastrophe. 3-1 on. And even at short odds, enormous sums have been laid on him.
But where one man gains, another loses. So there are those with the strongest interest in preventing him being there next week.
Well, I should have thought that was obvious.
That's King's Pylon, gentlemen. Off to the west.
Very isolated establishment.
I saw another group of buildings some way back.
Capleton Stables. Lord Backwater's establishment. He owns Desborough.
That's the second favourite for the plate.
Ah.
I suppose the damned animal will walk away with it now. Scandalous.
Who runs Capleton?
A man called Silas Brown. Unlikable sort of fella.
He and Straker couldn't stand the sight of each other.
And the two establishments are, 2 miles apart?
Something like that. Too damn close, if you ask me.
You value isolation, Colonel.
Of course. Secrecy is essential. Fortunes can be made and lost on inside information. The business is full of rogues, touts, spies, what have you.
Simpson is one such. I discovered he's got bets placed against Silver Blaze.
And what amount?
£5,000.
Good God.
But if this Simpson abducted my horse, what did he do with it? Where is it now?
I presume you've searched Capleton.
Of course we have.
I saw to it personally.
And?
Oh, good Lord, ma'am, what do you think? Not a damn trace.
Horse's stable there, tack room there, trainer's house, yard paved, it's noisy. Direct access out into the moor, lanterns hung there, there and there. Yeah, very good, very good.
The Colonel has abandoned us, has he?
Yes, he's gone to tell Mrs. Straker we're here.
He did say.
No doubt.
Do you want to speak to the stable lad?
Not yet. Where is Straker's body?
Good God.
Quite, Doctor.
Repeated blows to the side of the head. Almost the entire left side of the skull is shattered. A weighted club is a coward's weapon.
Simpson had in his possession a stick with a hollowed-out end filled with lead.
If owning a Penang lawyer makes a man a murderer, you should be out arresting a sizable portion of the population.
I do have other evidence against the man, Mr. Holmes.
Did you examine Simpson's stick?
Minutely.
And?
No traces. But he'd had ample time to clean it up.
Of course, yes. Are there any other wounds?
On the left thigh.
The thigh. Fascinating, Doctor.
It's a perfectly clean cut. And not particularly deep.
That's hardly consistent with the savagery to the head.
Not in the least.
Did Simpson have a knife on him when you arrested him?
No, but Straker was grasping a knife when he was found.
Indeed, in which hand?
The right. It was clotted with blood. My first thought was that he defended himself vigorously.
Does Simpson bear any injuries?
No. So I'm forced to assume that Straker injured himself in his fall.
Inspector, altering your theory to fit in with a preconceived conclusion?
Actually, it is quite possible. After a massive injury to the brain, there's often convulsive struggling, thrashing about. I think he may well have inflicted that cut on himself.
Thank you, Doctor. Sorry, Mr. Holmes.
No, don't be. I have no preconceived theory to upset. Yes, the fingers of the left hand have been straightened after death. What was he holding in that hand?
A silk muffler, striped in red and black. Both the maidservant and the stable lad are ready to swear that Simpson was wearing it that night.
Quiet, King! Down, boy!
I'm sorry about that, gentlemen.
It's of no matter. This is the table where you ate your supper?
Yes, sir.
And it was through this window that the maidservant handed you the tray.
Edith, yes, sir.
Edith, yes. Let me see. It's too small for an entrance.
How are you feeling now, Ned?
Well, bright as ninepence, thank you, sir. Though they had the devil's own jug to wake me up Tuesday morning, I'm told.
Have you identified the drug that was used?
Powdered opium.
Powdered opium. Did all the household eat the same dish?
Excellent, Watson.
They did, Doctor. No ill effects.
And the dish what?
Curried mutton, sir.
The maid Edith will testify that Simpson was carrying a folded packet made of white paper. He said to her, make sure the lad has this tonight.
How does Simpson explain that?
He says it was a £10 note.
And presumably he claims it was to bribe young Ned here into giving him inside information.
He did say, sir, as he could put some money into my pocket.
Thank you, Ned.
Nonetheless, a paper packet is exactly the sort of container powdered opium would be in. Shall I bring in the maid now?
No, no. I'd like to see what Straker had in his pocket.
Here you are, gentlemen.
Let me see. A box of Vestas, pipe, sealskin pouch with half an ounce of long-cut Cavendish. Silver stopwatch, some papers. Well. I presume, from bloodstains, that this is the knife you mentioned.
Yes, sir.
Yes, not exactly what I was expecting. It's something in your line, surely, Doctor. Here.
Yes, indeed. This is what we call a cataract knife. You see how small and fine the blade is? It's only used for the most delicate work.
Curious choice for a weapon.
There are all sorts of knives to be found in stables like this. Straker just grabbed the nearest one to hand when he set off after Simpson.
Yes, very possibly. Now, these papers. Account from a hay merchant. Instructions from Colonel Ross. Now, what's this? Madame Lazurier of Bond Street, London. Also your department, Watson?
Thank you very much. Well, it's a dressmaker's account for £37.15. It's actually made out to a William Derbyshire.
So Mrs. Derbyshire has expensive tastes. May I keep this for a short while, Inspector?
You think it important?
Considerably. Colonel Ross.
Holmes.
And you must be Mrs. Straker.
Yes, sir.
Please accept our sincere condolences. Allow me.
Thank you.
I have explained to Mrs. Straker why you're here, gentlemen.
Forgive me, madam, but certain questions must be asked.
Of course. I'll help you all I can.
Thank you. On which side of this house is your bedroom?
Mr. Holmes, that cannot be relevant.
Colonel, please. Mrs. Straker.
At the front of the house.
So your bedroom window looks across the yard at the stables?
Yes.
Yes. On the night of the tragedy, you heard nothing untoward?
Nothing, sir. Nothing at all.
No one heard the least disturbance, Mr. Holmes.
That's enough now, Holmes.
One last point.
Yes.
Who is Mr. William Derbyshire? Madam?
He's a friend of my husband's. A close friend. John spoke of him from time to time.
And you have met him?
No, he lives in London.
Ah.
According to the maidservant, Derbyshire's letters are occasionally addressed here.
Well, that explains everything. I thank you for your patience, Mrs. Straker.
Sir.
Oh, one final thing. Surely I met you in Plymouth some little time ago.
Mr. Holmes?
At a garden party.
A g- garden party? No, sir,
I could have sworn it. You wore a costume of dove-coloured silk with ostrich feather trimming.
Oh, I never had such a dress, sir.
Oh, well, that quite settles it. My apologies.
Holmes, that was an outrageous display of insensitivity.
But quite illuminating and therefore necessary.
You may think so.
Inspector, shall we go to the murder site while the light still lasts?
By all means.
I shall endeavour to calm Mrs. Straker.
I was about to suggest exactly that.